Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Roundtable.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Roundtable, coming to you from Beijing. I'm your host, He Yang. May the 1st is International Workers' Day. This is a special day to honor workers worldwide. We applaud your hard work and celebrate your contributions and achievements to society and the economy. And if you get the day off, by the way, kick back and enjoy the show. If you're still working, a massive shout out to you and thank you. Your hard work doesn't go unnoticed. Today, we take a deep dive into the ever-evolving landscape of employment, spotlighting the surge of new occupations making waves in China. For today's program, I'm thrilled to have the always delightful Yu Shun once again with us. Hey, Yu Shun.
Hey.
And it's good to have you as always. And today we have a distinguished colleague joining us. We're super excited to have Li Qiuyuan from CGTN TV with us, where she is recognized for her insightful reporting and outstanding hosting skills. So welcome, Qiuyuan.
Thank you so much. And hey, everybody. So glad to be here.
It's wonderful to see you step out of TV.
Wonderful to be into your studio as well. I like the sighting.
And I'm sure everybody would love to know where to find you when you're not on Roundtable.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that. So some of the shows that I do with CGTN include China 24, Asia Today, and World Today. These are daily programs that air at 7 p.m., 8 p.m. every night. So what we do is that we give our viewers in-depth reports about the international, political, and breaking news of the day. And my team and I also do documentaries, features, and talk shows every now and then. So yeah, I've been doing this job for, 13 years and still loving it.
And that's just absolutely fabulous because you can just feel the passion that Qiuyuan carries every day, I feel. And it's really great to have a brush of fresh air into our show, along with our dear old Yu Shun, who's actually very young. Well, the thing is, Qiuyuan, what do you most look forward to joining us on this radio adventure is what I want to know right now.
You know, I listen to the radio, I listen to podcasts all the time, but this is my first time ever recording a podcast, so I'm super excited about this. And I know Roundtable is one of the best shows here.
Thank you.
Have really loyal fans, so I'm really looking forward to some fun and thought-provoking discussions.
Yeah, I feel the same way, actually, because we are having also a new kind of a new experience of recording things with camera on.
Yes, indeed. And we've done live streams and some camera work, but yes, today we are having a little bit of a spiced up experience as well. And of course, you have plenty of visual short videos that you can anticipate from today's show, and do look up the internet and social media for all that good stuff. And while Qiuyuan, you bring expertise from the world of television, I'm so excited for you to experience the unique magic of radio. It's all about intimacy, connection, and the art of painting vivid pictures with just our voices. So let the magic of radio unfold as we blend actually the best of two worlds today. And to shake things up, we will do that with a game celebrating the new and innovative workers of our time. Yes. And these are individuals who are carving out paths and defining the workforce future in their own unique ways. We will each receive 3 clues and guess the new occupation making an impact in today's labor force. And who's giving the clues? It's us three. We take turns. Actually, we will compete with each other with the guesses.
Yeah, let's keep a score.
Yes.
Yeah, let's see who's going to win the game. I always love a good game show. It's like playing Jeopardy here. Finally, yes, let's go.
Let's get the fun going, and there are going to be some challenging guesses. All right, so Yu Shun, let's start with you.
Of course.
I hope the clues aren't too difficult, but we will see.
The first one is, so this is an industry that many parents often mistakenly believed to be an illegitimate occupation.
Oh, so is it not legal?
But actually, national training plans and dedicated programs are now being implemented to nurture talents in this field and recognizing it as a legitimate and impactful career path in the digital age.
Okay, digital. That's the key word, digital. I think. Mm-hmm.
This is my first clue. So, Joanne.
Is it video game player, professional video game player?
No way.
I got it?
But it is in this industry, but another position.
Video game story script writer.
Very close.
Okay, Chiu-Yang.
Video game architect or designer or developer.
Also very close, a part of it. So I will give you another clue. So
okay.
Another clue is that, it is quite obvious. This may be a dream career for many boys.
I hate gender stereotypes, but...
Of course, a lot of girls may want to be... The third one is the related industry has also become a competition event at the 19th Asian Games in Hangzhou.
Oh.
And the Chinese team has won 4 gold medals.
It's gotta be esports.
Yeah.
Athlete.
Yes. So I'm gonna...
Okay. Your time to let us know.
It is esport trainer.
Trainer!
Yes.
We were so close!
We were.
Yes, because some of the points that you said are already included in the, projects and curriculums in training esport trainers. So all of these corresponding vocational training courses, including like venue operation, event planning, and industry management are all included in these kind of projects.
All right. Okay, so we've got that one. Well, we've missed that one.
Yes, but I will give you like half of the points because you're so close.
You're so generous.
Joanne, you got it from the first guess.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Okay, so you get half a point. We'll mark that.
Both of you, I think.
Thank you.
Both of you.
And now, Chiu-Yan, it's your turn to give the clues.
Okay. I'm so excited for this profession because, if I ever get a chance to do it, I would definitely go for it. So hear me out. My first clue is this job has certain requirements on physical fitness.
We need the second clue, I think.
The second one is now widely seen as a job of the future that will be in demand, but it does not exist just yet. But it's reported that you can start applying for the job in 2025.
Wow. Okay, living in the future. And okay, do you have an idea? Because I'm still kind of in the woods.
Is it? About something gym coach or something?
Futuristic thing.
Futuristic, yes it is.
Okay.
The third clue is that there are certain risks of the job that could endanger your life.
There's no way I can get it. And seriously, you want to do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's going to be quite challenging.
It is.
And you will explore a lot of things in
this
field.
Exactly. Getting fitness. You're getting it, getting close. Let me give you more hints. So it has something to do with Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. And it has something to do with flying and traveling.
Spaceship.
Close.
Okay, I think I'm giving up already.
Yushun is really close. Come on.
So a professional astronaut? You can be an astronaut.
Spaceship designer.
Okay, so the answer is, drum roll, space tourism guide.
An occupation of the future.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I'm super excited about space travel, anything related to space, space launches, spacewalks, that fires me up. And I know some of you might think that this is a futuristic concept, this is a non-essential experience and might be a luxury, but hear me out. I really think that we've hit a turning point in 2022, when companies like Virgin Galactic, Blue Origin, and SpaceX offered their first batch of tourists to space. And that kind of marked the beginning of mass commercialized space flight, the dawn of mass space tourism. Now, they were not the first, the first space tourist travel to space in 2001. That was an American guy named Denis Tito. He traveled to the International Space Station with the help of a Russian rocket. But then things weren't on a mass level. But things could be changing from now. And I really believe that for most of the people alive today, they will have a real chance to travel to space, whether it's a suborbital space flight to the edge of the space or, somewhere in between the moon, Mars, or even, landed on the Mars someday.
Plant some potatoes.
Maybe. I think I need a a golden parachute first to be able to get that golden ticket to go up there.
And speaking about the ticket, I think by all indications, space travel will become affordable within the next 15 to 20 years.
All right. So let's all keep fit and see if I have a chance to get that
golden
parachute.
It could really happen in China, by the way. I've been talking to industry experts. They are saying that, you know, space travel in China is really entering a new era and things could be happening as early as 2025. I'm talking about commercialized space travel. And then the tickets are expected to be at 2 million to 3 million yuan. And that is according to the director of Aerospace Flight Science and Technology Center of the Chinese Academy of Sciences.
All right. Well, it's something to keep an eye for. And certainly when we look at what's going on in the world, in the job market, there are a lot of changes that's happening every day. And I have three clues for this new occupation. We'll see if you can get it. Let me just give you a little heads up. It's very different from what you two have been aiming for with what you've come up with.
Okay. A niche job.
Here's the first clue. It's got very limited access to services, despite the existence of around 1,000 institutions and companies offering it nationwide. There is still a massive shortage of workers and indicating an unmet demand in the market. That is clue number one. Okay, I deliberately keep it vague. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's clue number two. In China, approximately 42 million elderly individuals are in need of this service. Yes, Chiu-Yuan.
AI healthcare developer?
No. And
retirement planner?
You're heading towards one good direction, I think.
AI healthcare taker.
It has nothing to do with AI, by the way. And it's not technological related.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
So but it's a different good direction, though.
Yeah, different from what you guys were.
Related to aging population, huh?
Yes.
The elderly. Okay.
Yes. Okay, so these are two clues. And number three is that the service that these good people provide is really essential to elderly people's relaxation and comfort. And these elderly folks are most likely bedridden, so they're not mobile and they need this service. Yes.
So healthcare center designers?
No. Yes, Chiu-Yuan.
Wellness coaching, life coaching, meditation instructor.
No. They go to people's homes providing this service. I would think the demand is there and people easily understand it, but it's still pretty niche.
In-home chefs?
Oh, you're getting there, but these are helping bedridden people. Well, should I just let you know what I'm... Okay, you shouldn't give me that smile. All right, this is called assisted bathing aids.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That is actually quite a market or
an area. Unmet market for this. And in Chinese, it's called 住浴室. Yeah, I haven't found a terrific English translation to it, which gives the amount of dignity and respect that this work deserves, as well as conveying what they do in a really forward manner. It seems like the cost is usually around 200 to 500 yuan for each bath. And what they do is remarkable because not all apartments in China have a bathtub. So therefore, usually it's two of these assisted bathing aids work as a pair, and then they go to your home and then they use this inflatable bathtub. So they need to set this thing up in your home and then set up this facility, and therefore the person who needs the service will be laid in the bathtub, and then you be covered up to make sure you're warm and to sort of respect your privacy as well, because I understand anybody might feel a little bit strange, uncomfortable when a stranger comes to your home and help you with this kind of service. But once, you know, it becomes a steady service, I suppose it'll get, you know, better. But I watched this documentary about folks who work in this field, and of course with privacy in mind. And then the elderly folks, sometimes because of their health situation, and they haven't taken a proper bath or shower for a long time. And then just the amount of joy and relaxation and comfort that they get from this service, it is so rewarding. But this is still pretty new profession, and nor do a lot of people know about it, nor does this cost can be shouldered by all families, but I think it's important to also let you know that this service does exist and hopefully it can help more people. And for those who work in the industry, if you have more clients, hopefully it will, you know, make this industry roll better as well. So that's that. And so far,
none of us got
you got 0.5.
Oh, yeah, you too.
All right. Wow. And now it's Yushun, your turn for the second round of presenting interesting new occupations.
We are ready.
I think based on your knowledge, it is quite easy for you guys.
Is it related to our profession?
So the first clue of this one, professionals in this field utilize advanced algorithms to enhance their product, creating stunning results for commercial use. Wow, you already?
Digital marketer? E-commerce marketer?
No. And the second clue is, as technology advances, this role becomes increasingly valuable in streamlining the process and producing high-quality marketable products efficiently in this industry. Still quite vague, right?
Yes. You've kept it hard for everyone.
Is it related to AI?
Yes.
It's related to AI.
So the third clue is, this profession combines the artistry of traditional skills with the cutting-edge capabilities of technology in the world of graphic and videos. I think a lot of cameramen in this room will know this job.
If only they could give us more clues as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Is it AI visual developer?
What is a visual developer then?
They utilize AI to, you know, create visuals, graphics, to assist in marketing.
Yes, and we call that photographer. Yes, actually it is AI photographer.
Oh,
so actually, AI practitioners only need to, you know, light and photograph the products themselves. Then the AI will, you know, create and render the background image, and they can create a wonderful commercial photography work by just taking a picture of the item. And of course, this sounds extremely simple and easy for them to do their job, but actually it also requires a solid client base first, right? Mm-hmm. You need to have a lot of people ask you to do that, and followed by a good foundation in photography skills. Even if just lighting, good lighting skills is not that easy to acquire. Mm. I think a lot of cameramen will not for that.
Yeah.
But will they threaten the jobs of, you know, human photographers?
That's why they're called photographer, because it actually enhance the efficiency, I think, and productivity of them to actually finish their job in a shorter period of time.
Qiuyuan, you have prepared for us one more.
Yes, so the next profession. Here are the three clues. Ready? So the first one, people doing this job will be collaborating with artists, psychologists, and programmers.
Okay.
The second clue is, the end product could be used for various purposes, such as education, therapy, simulations, and gaming.
Okay, you both are very much into gaming.
You should.
AI music composer.
Very close, but no.
It's about AI then.
Well, they could utilize AI in the process.
So music is the thing.
Music. Well, they could be included. Musical elements could be included.
Mm-hmm. Okay, artist.
The third clue is that it's in the tech field. And by the way, it is already officially listed as a new profession in China, according to, you know, the reference book of occupation classification.
All right.
Should I reveal the answer?
Yes, please.
The answer is virtual reality architect.
Oh.
So yeah, they design immersive virtual environments for various purposes, right? They develop interactive experiences, integrating cutting-edge VR technologies. They could also utilize AI. And they collaborate with programmers, artists, and psychologists to create compelling virtual spaces. They also optimize user interfaces and experiences to enhance immersion and usability. So they have to also, you know, stay updated on emerging VR hardware and software advancements.
Of course. Yeah, I actually heard that some people are creating some of the models of cars by using AI and then see them through a kind of a VR headset. And then they can actually like sit in the car that they designed and export this design project mm-hmm. to some car companies, and they're making money out of it.
Yeah. And also mm-hmm. I had the chance to interview one guy who actually designs this stuff and have put together an immersive world on the tallest building in Shanghai. He has this immersive world of AI dream. And I saw the people who were still doing the beta testing of it. And then basically you have a small team of people who are trying to figure out, you know, what is the better VR experience. And then also they're like, oh, here's a glitch because the immersive world doesn't look real enough. And then we need to like add more like light, add more of the screen computer effects as such. And then definitely this is something you can try out during this International Workers' Day holiday if you're in Shanghai in the center of the city. And yeah, this is all just getting all closer and closer.
You know, it's very interesting. We see all kinds of AI services popping up now, but a lot of people are really asking the question of, you know, should AI be slowed or stopped, considering all the risks, until the risks can be managed? Mm-hmm. You know, should we develop non-human minds that can outnumber, outpace, obsolete us, and risk our control over civilization? I don't know what you guys think.
Well, that is a really deep question, I think. I agree that if we run too quickly without, you know, having some of these, I think, pretty obvious safety and security considerations in mind, then I think it's a bad idea.
Actually, I think I have a quite optimistic view on this point, because still, AI, of course, they are so powerful, and they are actually managing and processing a lot of information. We talk about ChatGPT, Midjourney, human create AI. Of course, we see a lot of these sci-fi movies that AI just starting to be rebellious and start to control their own behaviors. But in real world, maybe we have a better control on that behind all of these codes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm an AI optimist as well. I'm aware of the risks. You know, there are net risks, but I also think about the benefits that can bring to the human race. And coming from an AI ethics standpoint, you know, I think about this a lot. What is the ethics? What is the moral compass when we talk about this field of study? What is the anchor, right? And then I often look to classical philosophers. They weren't principally concerned with right or wrong, the normal way we perceive ethics. They were principally concerned with how to live a happy life. And Aristotle termed this eudaimonia, which means human flourishing and human happiness, or a unique combination of these two things. And I think if you apply that lens to AI, some of the things that we consider ethical and responsible might not be the case. But if AI can bring you know, contributions to human flourishing, that could be considered responsible and ethical. And one principal example of that is Google's DeepMind AlphaFold system. You're probably familiar with this model. It cracked the major challenge in biology of deciphering protein folds, which stands to transform modern medicine here and in the future. So if that have significant patient outcome, you know, that contributes to human flourishing.
Absolutely.
So I'm on net, I'm less worried than I'm fearful.
Yeah, well, I always applaud an optimist, because we need you guys to balance out the darkness that we have in our minds.
But again, I'm an optimist in general, so I might be wrong with this one. I don't know.
Well, I think you are definitely right in pointing out the wonderful things that technology can bring to us. But always, you know, there's the other side of things that we're already seeing the risks. We're already seeing how these things can be handled poorly. And it's important to set these guardrails, in my opinion, in place. For example, we already see all the biases, the democratization of technology. So I think this is definitely a tough one, because also you don't want to restrain progress of the technology, but how do we use it safely? I think that is just the major head scratcher for everyone. Yes, and how fun was that? Was Chuyen the only person who got some points?
Half a point?
I think I got it right half of the one.
Yeah, all right. I don't think I got anything, but, you know, hooray to you
guys.
Wait,
where's our prize? Where's my prize?
We need that. We need that.
You
that
know, they actually have been so kind. They prepared a tiara.
All right, say a crown. A crown.
Yes, it's a crown. And I guess you guys can share that one. As we celebrate International Workers' Day, it's the perfect opportunity to delve into the new workforce trends in China and join us as we dissect the catalysts, hurdles, and social impact of these contemporary professions. Now, let's talk about what drives the emergence of novel occupations. We've listed out a few for you guys, and what are the hidden reasons brewing all this change?
Of course, I think technology plays a big role in this part, right? The technological advancements or the rapid technological progress, especially in areas like artificial intelligence and digital platforms and automation, all of these things are creating new roles and industries, actually, and new quality productive forces. This is kind of a popular topic in recent days. And so the push for all of these high tech, high efficiency, and high quality production is leading to the development of new industries and occupations.
Yeah, as a result, you can see a significant trend, right, in the rise of new professions. They're heavily focused on technology-driven or knowledge-based occupations. You know, many of the emerging professions are closely linked to advancements in what Yusha mentioned, AI, data science, biotech, and digital media. And this trend reflects, I think, the growing importance of technology in shaping, you know, various aspects of our lives, from how we work, how we communicate, to how we access information and consume goods and services. And that's one big change.
Oh, definitely. It does have an impact on our lifestyle or how we conduct our lives. And at the same time, it has created this emergence of a whole bunch of new jobs. And some of them are the ones that we mentioned in the first half of the show. And also, when you look at the numbers, according to the 9th National Survey on the status of the employee team by the All China Federation of Trade Unions, they show that the total number of employees in China is about 402 million, of which 84 million are laborers in the so-called new business forms as they take part in. So I suppose there's definitely something new, different. You can see that this is already affecting the daily lives and the livelihoods
of many people. Are, you know, in the service sector or these new emerging tech industries. Very interesting.
Yes. And maybe this shows that if you're feeling maybe a little bit insecure about your job or your occupation, that is the line of work you're in, then you kind of know what direction you might want to go in terms of upskilling and reskilling, maybe.
Just how to cope with it.
Right? Yeah, this is how the society goes, you know, because even though there are some traditional industries, they are evolving with the advancements of technology. Just like, for example, socially environmental industries or, you know, a lot of these managers in developing or designing all of these green plans. Of course, education and training, educational reforms and vocational training programs are preparing the workforce for new occupations by providing relevant skills and knowledge. And in these areas, they're not only using new technologies, but also creating new occupations in this way.
Speaking about that, preparing the workforce, you know, when I look at these new jobs, I think about when I was a kid, you know, when I was 6 or 7 years old, a lot of the new professions here didn't exist back then. So my parents couldn't really prepare me for the future. And I think about the kids out there, you know, for my kids who are 4 and 2 years old, who knows what kind of new jobs will be out there, you know, in 20 years, in 15 years. You just, you know, the world is just changing so fast.
Yes. And that's the thing. A lot of people are saying that these days it's impossible to sort of predict what happens next. But what you can do is help your kids be prepared for major disruption that will happen. It's just you don't know whether it's tomorrow or the day after that. And also this might be reflected in how parents are looking at education these days. And education, when you think about it, this is maybe a traditional industry. We've always had it. But then nowadays you see that there are a lot of the calling for upgrading of traditional industries, including things like elderly care. The new occupation that I mentioned in the first half of the show, I think, falls nicely into this upgrading elderly care category. Also, one thing I realized that with a lot of these new occupations that we're talking today is that in China now, it's not just about, oh, this is a new job. Okay, so this is an AI graphic designer or whatnot. Now, this is about even going one level further, that people are looking for even more advanced technology, more advanced service. It is an upgrade on some of the existing relatively new jobs and occupations, but there is just a higher demand for better service, better quality of technology that people might be talking about. Yes, and this is the future.
Yeah. I think it also goes with the changes of demographic in different regions, of course. Just like your example, He Yang, when we are talking about elderly care, we may only thinking about these well-being or wellness care centers or something like that. But these people are the new demands. They want better service. And there is an area, and of course, because of the changes in demographic, we can see that there are more current needs for that kind of area.
So you see new jobs like healthcare professionals, you know, elder care specialists, retirement planners. Those are all the results of, we've mentioned, changing demographics. And I also think another factor driving these new jobs are the economic factors. Market demand for niche products, right, niche services, and shifts in consumer spending patterns, they have all influenced the creation of new jobs. So jobs like gig economy platforms, digital entrepreneurships, e-commerce, fintech, and also environmental concerns. So we see people have more growing awareness of the environmental issues, and they have prompted the creation of new jobs like sustainability specialists or consultants, renewable energy engineers, eco-friendly product designers.
Yeah, this probably requires somebody who has the background in green technology, as well as having the designer eye, and also the execution ability to make that come true.
And also, you know, social and cultural trends as well, right? We see different lifestyle preferences these days, new cultural attitudes, new cultural trends. For example, our growing popularity of focus on wellness and mindfulness has led to the creation of jobs such as wellness coaches, holistic therapists.
Yeah, I think a lot of these jobs are also being listed by a lot of young people, because this is kind of a way of them expressing themselves. And it is not only, you know, a job, it is also part of their profile. Maybe LinkedIn is what I'm thinking about. They are creating a profile that express themselves, and it is showing their attitude and characteristic.
That is interesting. These days, we see that with technology and all these changes happening, people are reacting in different ways. And what's the impact have these new occupations wielded on the industry and society? And do you think it's for better or for worse?
You know, when I think about the impact of these new professions, I think about the, you know, with the rise of these new professions, what kind of jobs are dying? What kind of jobs cannot survive in the future? I would say, you know, anything related to manual office job, jobs that involve repetitive or administrative routine tasks. So you're talking about data entry clerks, secretaries, accounting, bookkeeping, and payroll clerks. I think those are the things that's going to get automated. Well, some of them already are automated. One of my friends has just rolled out an AI that helps you with your bookkeeping and is doing an amazing job. So
I also heard that, you know, some professionals in AI industry or technology companies, they predict that within 2 to 3 years, over half of the jobs, not positions, but tasks, will be replaceable by these technologies or AIs. And tasks such as learning, like sketching, Photoshop, Excel, or writing papers can all be resolved by using these technologies. And what used to take like 8 hours, now you can use just 2 hours to finish everything. And with AI or these technologies, you can produce mature commercial works right away.
Yes. And certainly with this increase in productivity, some argue then therefore most workers in relevant industries can get maybe 4 workday weeks, but not every company nor country is going that direction either. Because if I'm a, I'd say a horrible boss, then if you guys have increased your productivity so much, then you should be doing more instead of giving you one day off. Anyhow, I wonder what you guys think about, you know, on the one hand, we have supposedly with this round of AI revolution, then it seems like a lot of the office jobs can be greatly enhanced in productivity. And therefore, should the 4-day work week arrangement prevail?
I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
I think it is a kind of a double-sided sword. Many people say that if you know AI or know technology now is like knowing how to use computer 20 years ago. That's why, as we discussed before, many people actually feel anxious about, you know, the rapid development of AI, because if they don't keep up, they might feel like they will be left behind. At the same time, it is improving your flexibility, your, you know, social innovation and employment diversification. But along with it, anxiety caused by these fast-paced world and more regulation may be needed. In this case, we're talking about 4-day workday. Of course, I will all for 4-day workday. But speaking of the regulations and how can we actually apply and the consequences after we apply this kind of new policy, I think it is a lot to think about, because, of course, it will influence a lot of not only workday things, but also weekend things, because it's absolutely going to be better for a lot of employees. But a lot of times workdays are the time that is not very crowded. And when we are having that kind of issue for one more day, that is another situation.
Well, also, it depends on how you're going to structure this thing. And in a lot of countries, actually, this has already been something that companies have implemented, and then you don't necessarily have to take, you know, Friday off, for example, and maybe like hump day is the day that is the day off.
Work from home, right? Yeah. I'm all for the work from home mode. And I think a lot of jobs could survive AI in the future. We've talked about some of the jobs that couldn't survive AI. Oh, by the way, I want to also mention this. Housekeepers, I think those are the jobs, and security guards are likely to be replaced. I really think about in 5 to 10 years, most of our house duties will be performed by robots. I'm so impressed by all the robots that's going to enter the market very soon. And think about it, having robots doing all your chores, washing your dishes, and what you're going to just pay them $100 a month. That's terrific. And security guards, you know, depends on where you live. I've definitely seen a lot of security robots in the United States. Cashiers, ticket clerks, you already use, you know, self-checkout at a store. So those are the jobs that I think probably won't survive in the future. But talking about jobs that will survive in the future, you know, with the flexibility of AI, with the come of new technologies, some of the jobs I think require human qualities, such as creativity, empathy, critical thinking, complex decision making. You know, for example, you talk about senior care. I think, you know, caregivers and social workers are the jobs that won't be replaced by AI, because you need that human empathy, right? Compassion and interpersonal skills when doing these jobs. And also jobs involve complex and critical thinking, decision-making, like lawyers, judges. Those are the jobs that won't be replaced. What do you think about our jobs? Radio hosts, news anchors. Will our jobs be replaced?
Well,
I don't think so, because maybe that is because I am doing the job. But anyway, when you are speaking out your ideas, it is kind of a creative things that you need to handle by all of the knowledge and life experience that you have. And when you are giving out these ideas, I think, of course, AI have so big database, but they are giving out the answers that they replicated. Can I say that? But anyway, the ideas that I have are based on the experience that I had. Mm-hmm. And I think that is kind of an irreplaceable thing.
I'm not so optimistic about this, actually. I'm just going to be the one that's just going to, you know,
balance it.
Yep. Burst the bubble, I guess. But I do think that for established or super talented people with the ability of independent thinking and have their own charisma, I think, sure. But for, I'm sorry to say, mediocre workers of any profession, I feel, you know, being replaced by AI isn't really all that difficult. But I saw this really interesting study coming from the US that found out that usually, I'm sorry to say, the mediocre workers who are not, you know, the superstars, they actually benefit the most with AI assistance. So it's interesting to see what might happen. I'm a little bit afraid to crystal ball here because I know I'm going to be wrong. And
they can assist you in so many tasks: content creation, data analysis, audience engagement. But with that said, I do think human anchors bring unique quality skills. For example, the human connection, right? Emotion, empathy, authority. They can interpret nonverbal cues and, you know, just navigate dynamic, complex, contextual information. So that's something AI is difficult to emulate and replicate.
And I heard that the integration of AI is just help people to get better, and then they can actually fit in better positions.
Yes, and from fostering sustainability efforts to addressing evolving consumer needs, all these roles we've talked about, I think they are in the spirit of adaptation and innovation, the ones that really fly. As we navigate the challenges ahead, let's embrace the opportunities presented by these new vocations and build a more resilient and inclusive workforce for the future. Coming up, join us in the happiest corner on the airwaves, Roundtable's Happy Place.
Delivery, delivery, delivery.
What is it?
Happiness from Round Table.
This is the segment where we share what's truly made us happy this week. It could be a place, it could be a book, it could be an experience. Well, you shouldn't. Let us know, what is your happy place this week?
Last week, I had the opportunity to visit a park in Beijing, and it was quite an experience, I would say. I entered this park and I noticed that something different. The park was filled with digitalized fitness equipment, each integrating screens and cameras and along with AI technology maybe to interact with users in real time. And it was like, you know, stepping into the future of outdoor fitness, I would say. So some people just enthusiastically engaged with these innovative installations. Some were waving their hands playing real live version of Fruit Ninja, while others were doing pull-ups and using rowing machines that seamlessly blended physical activity with digital gaming, I would say. So it feels like it is kind of a perfect combination of technology and outdoor recreation. So I was totally shocked that, you know, the infrastructure now in China is totally in the next level, I would say. At least that was quite new to me. Also, seeing such advanced infrastructure in our city park made me appreciate the efforts of local government in providing these accessible and engaging recreational spaces for residents. I think these are the commitments of them to enhance the quality of life for residents. So anyway, my visit to this park was not only enjoyable, but also eye-opening. I suggest everybody take a stroll during the holiday, maybe, if you find that many famous tourist attractions are super crowded. Why not just explore some of these small parks around your own neighborhood and at the same time get enough sunlight and exercise?
Wonderful. And that's something you can do during the International Workers' Day holiday if you get the days off. And Chouyuan, what do you have for us? Invite us to your happy place.
So I recently traveled to this amazing place in suburb Beijing for a flower viewing tour. So, you know, it's springtime and Mother Nature is bursting back with life with these unbelievable display of beautiful wildflower blooms. So if you are like me who wants to get closer to nature, this is the perfect trip for you. Have you ever heard of the train to spring?
That sounds super romantic.
So apparently it has been making a huge splash with tourists in China and around the world. So it's said that in Beijing, every March and April, the epicenter of the peach blossom spring fever is at the Junguan section of the Great Wall. And that train I just mentioned is going to take you deep into the heart of that pink paradise. Wow. So it's so beautiful. It'll be traversing a sea of flowers, and the view you're going to get is spring exclusive, right? You're literally looking at a fairy tale unfolding in front of your eyes. And the day I went, it was drizzling a bit in the morning, but it was even better. It was giving you that poetic vibe. So it's basically like you're looking at this ancient Chinese landscape painting taking shape right in front of your eyes. You've got the entire mountain blanketed by greens and super blooms, and you've got the Great Wall in the backdrop. The view is spectacular. I highly, highly recommend you guys go there. Take the train and then take it to, you know, the Great Wall to see the flower blooms.
Yes. I can already feel the freshness there.
Even the air smells sweeter over there, you know?
Yeah. And one sentence, there's quite an ancient Chinese poem, 春雨贵如油, that's what you experience, right? The spring rain is more expensive than oil.
And certainly I think I already hear tickets sold after Qiu Yuan's recommendation.
Tickets are extremely affordable, by the way. It costs you from 5 yuan to 18 yuan, which is approximately 70 US cents to $2.50 US dollars. So take it.
Yes, get on board. We need some train effects here. Yes, and you will not be disappointed. Thank you so much, Qiu Yuan, for sharing that with us. Can't wait to go. And what I have for you, yes, this has truly made me happy. Let me set it right. Jackie Cheng, or Zhang Xueyou, is one of the four heavenly kings in Canto Pop, who collectively dominated the pop music scene in the 1990s. But Jackie Cheng is the one and only nicknamed Geshen, or the God of Songs. And with a very successful career spanning over three decades, he hasn't been going on tour for almost a decade. Now, at the age of 62, he's finally back, currently holding his Jackie Cheng 60 plus concert tour. And I have to confess, as a younger millennial, I wasn't sure if Jackie Cheng's music was my cup of tea. But in 2024, I was like, hands down, I gotta go see him live, because this is like witnessing an important piece of pop culture and pop music history in China. So I did a few days ago, and it was the 114th concert of this tour.
Wow.
So how was it? If 60 plus looks as good as Jackie Cheng, I will take it. He has, well, on stage, the energy that could easily power a small city. And this guy has aged like fine wine. Why was this such a great experience? First, the God of Songs newscast could really sing. I mean, his rich and soulful baritone voice combined with dramatic yet skillfully and tastefully moderated vibrato, and also combined with emotive delivery, he is capable in delivering such a wide range of emotion through his music, from heart-wrenching ballads, which he's so well known for, to upbeat, energetic pop songs. And his dedication to his craft, as well as the unwavering commitment to absolutely bring the absolute best to his adoring fans, it was truly awe-inspiring. And second, I want to talk about age. With age, it sometimes brings experience and sometimes it doesn't. But I think for Jackie Cheng, age and experience have really worked in his favor. You can tell that he's spent decades honing his craft, even when he's away from the limelight, allowing him to maintain this incredible vocal range as well as physical stamina that makes it possible for the guy to rock on for many years, it feels. And what's more, he exudes this sense of 从容, which I love as a Chinese term, this sense of ease, effortless mastery, and a deep understanding of music and performance that comes from years of practice, experience, and of course, talent and charisma. So this is the best place to be, and I think it offers inspiration for all of us in the sense that, you know, keep doing what you are doing that you truly love and is passionate about. Because I think still, if you manage to do it to the ultimate level, I think, you know, with age, it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have a market. And just look at this guy. He's got the market clamoring for more. And one small observation I want to share with you before we go is that I did realize that his fans are of all demographics, and there are lots of guys as well. And there were these guys who were seated quite nearby where I was at, and they were possibly of the Gen X and millennial generation, you know, with receding hairlines and expanding waistlines. They were giving it their all and really singing their hearts out with Jackie Chung. And it just made me so incredibly happy that regardless of age, gender, walks of life, we could all just put aside our daily grind and escape into this music world of Jackie Chung. And that's just the definition of a great concert. I know a lot of you are on the go, traveling to places, and there are hundreds of live music events happening in China during this holiday. And get the tickets if this is what you want to do. Go relax, rest, and rejoice. You deserve it. And the local economies depend on this as a source of revenue. And you get to have fun. And isn't that just a win-win for everyone? Last but not least, I want to share my favorite song at this concert. It was a surprise. And last I checked this morning, more than 7 million QQ Music users have also hearted this as one of their favorites on the music streaming platform, 如果这都不算爱 by Zhang Shiyou. If this doesn't count as love, I don't know what does. So with love and passion, I want to share with you, you know, let's keep it going. Let that guide the way and fan the flicker of hope inside of all of us. So enjoy the music, and thank you so much, Qiu Yuan and Yu Shun, for joining the discussion. We hope to have you back whenever
you do. Oh, I'm all for it. Let's do it.
Let's do it. And thank you for tuning in. You can find us on Apple Podcast at Roundtable China. I'm He Yang. We'll see you next time.